Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. And my guest tonight is Vito Grigoli. And he actually, we met on one of the other shows. He was coming out of one of the other LA Talk Radio shows, Accent On. And we got to get together, and it's been a long time overdue. I'm glad to have you on the show. I've been planning this for a while, but I just want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So, yes, Ilona Europa from Accent On was the one. You were on her show. You were doing her show, and it was interesting. He sent me a bunch of clips, so I started digging in there, and. We got a bunch of interesting stuff, but before I play the first clip, I want to ask you, is how would you describe what you're doing musically, the style? Because I couldn't find a way to define it. You're doing so many different things. It was kind of hard for me to...
Exactly.
Not that I want to pigeonhole you at or anything like that.
It would have to be a very large pigeon.
Yes, very, very. Or a few dozen of them, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But It's more than just world music. It's more than just some jazz, rock, pop, blues, classical. There's so much going on there. It's a fascinating sound that you get. It's really very cool.
Thank you.
And also too, we're going to talk a little bit about, and I want you to talk about this, the healing power of music, because I've talked to a lot of musicians, and I do believe that that's a very important thing, that it can... I've seen it happen where it's actually healed people. So anyway, what I'm going to open up with is... this song is called La Paz, and it's probably... it's a good one to show your classical guitar chops, because you're playing a lot of... you're playing some really melodic and beautiful things here.
Thank you.
And what I want people to notice in the clip that I noticed... is listen to his timbre as he's playing the lines, his tone. He changes his tone while he's playing. And a lot of the greats do that, but you don't hear it a lot all the time. But I just want to, it's a very cool thing because it's very subtle, but it's truly, I remember in class when I was studying in school, that was they taught us how to do that. But I mean, you used it in a very creative and melodic way. So here's La Paz.
Thank you.
So, very interesting sound. You can hear, I love your tone when you get into the wound strings. When you get down there, it gets kind of like a hollow sound, but it's an interesting sound that you're getting in there.
It's a very Spanish guitar, not so much flamenco as it is Spanish guitar, which is something I ended up studying in college.
Well, let's talk about your background. Let's give us a little rundown of your influences and how you came to be where you are now.
That's always a good question. How did I come to be here? Well, I started out being interested in drums when I was about six. I saw the Monkees on TV. You guys are my age. And it was like a world-changing experience.
Where and he was a lefty, too.
Yeah.
We were talking about lefties.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
And so I wanted to play drums. And, of course, you know, we lived in an apartment building, so I got a practice pad.
Mm-hmm.
That got old after a while. And so, you know, very quickly after the Monkees, I got into the Beatles, which is like this whole world of music, as we know. And I thought Paul McCartney was very cool, so I wanted to play bass. So being left-handed, as we all are, I started playing bass. And I really wasn't getting very far at teaching myself bass. And for some reason, my mother decided she wanted to get me a guitar and suggested I play right-handed instead. And so I did that. And as we all know, has right-handed playing lefties.
Yes.
Has a distinct advantage in learning quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I became kind of impressive at about 15 and started gaining some attention. And then I got into high school, and my sister took me to, as my introduction into high school was, I'll take you to the homecoming dance. You've got to hear this band. They're incredible. I'm going, I'm like hot shit and stuff. And I come in, and this band blows me away. They're playing Steely Dan, all kinds of, you know, intricate arrangements. And it turns out it's Lukather, Landau, Steve Picaro, Carlos Vega.
Wow.
Still Life, which morphed into Toto.
My goodness.
And, you know, my jaw hit the floor, and I decided I sucked. And
wow. But Landau, and who played with Joni and did gobs of sessions, and it's those two together.
Yeah, I mean, together, hello.
I've never...
And they were like a year or two older than me, only.
Mm-hmm.
And they were playing like light years ahead of me. I thought I was hot shit. And so that was a game changer in my world. It was like, I want to do that. So I've been, you know, kind of following them around and you know, learning from what they've been doing. And, you know, they are such incredible guitar players, just in terms of not just being young kids who were doing sessions at 16, but just as the depth and breadth of their interest in what they do. You know, Landau playing on hit records and playing with Joni Mitchell, now playing blues. Lukather, everybody knows. And
yeah.
So, you know, and what I loved about them is they were taking things that I was interested in, putting them together, which is what I was interested in doing. So Lukather was kind of taking Jeff Beck and putting it together with Larry Carlton and coming up with this very refined Jeff Beck kind of tone. And Landau was doing a lot of Hendrix at the time. But they would come out and they'd do Bodhisattva.
Yeah.
Note for note, because they got the charts from Jeff, you know.
That's cool. That's really cool. But at that time you were playing what type of guitar when your mom got you a guitar?
I was deeply into the Beatles.
So you were playing electric guitar.
Yeah, and I got deeply into British blues, you know, Clapton, Beck, and to a lesser extent Page. That was my thing, and then, you know, a little bit of Deep Purple, a little bit of Bad Company, and that whole slew of stuff. And turns out I was really influenced by Joe Walsh without realizing until I started to try to do Joe Walsh, and I was going, wow, that's really accurate. How did I learn that? Because your ear picks it up without,
right.
deliberately, you know. I mean, it's slide work. He and Duane Allman were, you know, huge, huge in my world. But rhythmically, you know, Walsh is really big up there.
Mm-hmm. So when did you, when you went, you studied in school too, you studied music?
Well, I started taking music classes in high school because I kept going to summer school and finishing off the courses that they needed to. So at the top end of senior in high school, I was taking six music classes, two choirs and everything else I can get. I got the idea I should probably go to college instead of sticking around getting a high school education. So I left, went to LA Valley College and started... Mm-hmm. working on stuff there. But I in order to get into the program, you had to play classical. And so I was already interested in classical music, basically through a late influence, which is, you know, progressive rock, yes, and Genesis. So that got me very interested into that. And you kind of pair that with early world influence of the Beatles, and you kind of got a seed of what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because progressive rock, there's a lot of elements of classical music in it, you know, beyond what you think, beyond, yes, playing Firebird at the beginning of their concert.
Yeah.
It's, there's bits of essentially New Age music. You know, mm-hmm. the whole ending of side one of Relayer.
Well, also, too, their counterpoint. Well, the thing about Yes is the way they play against each other, and it works without getting, you know, fighting each other. You've probably known in jam sessions from years ago, everybody playing something else, and all of a sudden it's just a bunch of mush. But they actually, but they're following the structure and stuff is very, like, you know, traditional classical, partly from Rick Wakeman.
Yeah,
but
compositional.
Yeah, so it's amazing what they're doing, because they're doing complex stuff,
yeah.
even counter rhythms, but at the same time it all fits.
Yeah.
But
it was
that's
a really
yeah.
unique band, you know, with Bruford with his jazz influence. Steve Howe being very influenced by classical guitar as well, you know, and Anderson being influenced by just about anything.
Yeah.
Great
yeah. band. And yeah, it's just the magic group. I mean,
and
put
Chris
all
Squire. I mean, there's never been a bass player like him.
And he was, if I'm correct, he was self-taught, but like
yeah,
what
but
he's
he had a
doing.
Background in choir, singing choirs, which is why you hear him playing the fifth in the bass, which
yeah.
nobody was doing. Occasionally McCartney would jump into that. But he was kind of melding Entwistle and McCartney together sound-wise
yeah.
and doing, adding the classical influence, that well, choral influence more than classical music, really.
Yeah. So yeah, he would do all these beautiful lines.
Okay.
If you pull the bass, it's melodic. There's actual melodic material,
yeah.
and you get these weird inversions.
So he's singing one counterpoint, and he's playing another counterpoint.
Right,
it's
right.
Really,
really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So the but you're in the was it L.A. Valley College?
Yeah.
Or was that just an all classical department, or was there jazz, or was
there was jazz? But at that time, jazz was this other world, this complex other world that I did not understand, and,
mm-hmm.
and still kind of really don't. But I pretend to every time I show up at a jazz gig.
Because I mean, the reason I'm asking is, when I was at SC, it was all classical and nothing else. And it was very strict, but it would seem to me that they would tend to want to put you in, with your background and playing as much electric that you were playing and all that, they'd put you more to jazz than classical, because classical was like, they were like very elite and they were like, you know.
But I was really interested in Renaissance music.
Ah.
So I was playing, the first pieces I learned were, you know, classical pieces that were from the Renaissance, essentially lute music.
Did you play a lute?
Well, when I got to Cal State Northridge, and I was kind of like half in the history department, half in the music department, so I ended up kind of in the middle in the musicology
mm-hmm.
department. So I was very, very much doing that. My senior thing was all about the lute, a whole like 35-page report on the history
oh, wow.
of the lute. And I ended up finally getting one and playing it for a while, and then regrettably selling it, and I still haven't picked one up yet. But that's definitely on high on my list of things.
That's interesting.
Jan Ackerman's Tabernacle.
Yeah. okay.
That All was right. that was I heard that and some of the scores to some of the English programs I had been watching as a kid. And I was like, oh, I love this instrument.
Now I never got to. I've never played a lute, but what's the playing it? How much different is it than the guitar besides
well,
the tone?
Stylistically, you're supposed to not be playing it classical. Sorry, you're supposed to play it like this.
Okay.
Without nails, so we'll have this illustrative like this instead of like this.
Okay, so that's
here. Let's take a guitar.
Okay,
and I'll show you. So on a guitar, you're doing this.
Okay, let me
on
take
a lute,
that.
You're okay,
hold on, wait a minute. I'm trying to take a picture of it there. All right, here we go. Okay, that's
everybody
classic
radio,
guitar.
Put the radio up to your eyes.
Yes.
So you can see this.
Okay.
And lute's more like this, and no nails.
Okay.
Originally, but you listen to Julian Bream. You know, playing stuff, and he'll play it, you know, very classical style, because that's the way he learned. But you do, and it's a third F.
So I think actually Steve Howe plays it classical style too.
Well, he plays it kind of like.
Now, if I'm correct, the lute the frets are, they're
nylon.
They're nylon,
well,
ties.
They were like nylon. They were good at the time, but yeah, ties. The one I got, I had frets on it, and some of the ones that are
metal frets.
Metal frets now, because they're just a lot easier. But
did you ever play with the guy? Because it'd have to affect the sound.
It does. I mean, the whole a real authentic lute is a lot harder to play, and I'm not such a purist in terms of what I do. What I listen to, I'll want to listen to a pure thing. But for as what I'm doing, I don't.
Because as I understand, it just didn't have the sustain and resonance that you get like a classical guitar.
Yeah, but you've also got, you know, all these other courses. You know, everything's double courses except for the high string, which is single. But everything else is double. So you've got a kind of a bigger sound. This is the point of doing that, because you're playing in ensembles with sack butt and you know, cornets and crazy stuff and drums and stuff, and it's tuned like a guitar, but a third up, and the third string instead of G would be F sharp.
Oh wow!
So that's always interesting, because you're learning, when you're learning a guitar, you're playing it, you know, normal style, and then you have to learn it again with
yeah,
kind of crazy making, but you know.
Oh wow! So no, that's interesting. So the you started studying classical guitar.
Yeah.
And was there a lot of transcriptions of Renaissance stuff for classical?
It was happening more and more. You know, in the 70s is when things started exploding for Renaissance music. Exploding is a kind of a relative term.
But I remember a lot of, even at SC, there were little quartets of playing Renaissance stuff, more kind of underground. It wasn't.
There were a lot of stuff going on. It seemed much more than Northridge. Northridge was kind of more of a. Their department was very classical, Spanish guitar oriented, so I ended up doing. I spent a lot of time with Richard Stover, who was a musicologist who was an expert on Barrios. So that was very a world I wasn't expecting to get into, South American music.
Oh, wow. And that's interesting how a lot of the instruments that are from Mexico and South America. Similar in construction, like than a lute. Were they similar to that?
Well, the charango is kind of a little bit like a lute, and that's something I've been playing lately when I'm working with my dear friend Kimberly Haynes. But there are a lot of instruments. There's banjo sexto. What is it called? Bandura. Mm-hmm. Banduria.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember all the names at the top of my head, but there's a whole host of. Instruments from Central and South America, which are influenced by the instruments that the Spanish brought over, which are, you know, lutes and early guitars.
Are there tunings like the lute, or are they different tunings?
I haven't played enough of them to tell you for sure.
But you would tune it to a guitar, or would you, if you played one?
I'm kind of not one of those people who tunes a banjo like a guitar. I want to play a banjo and sound like a banjo. I don't want to sound like a guitar with a banjo sound. So I've always learned instruments in their natural tuning.
Oh, okay.
However pain in the butt that is.
That must be rattling your brain, all those different tunings and fingerings. That's a lot.
I've got, you know, like on Kimberly's album, I paint banjo, mandolin, charango, sitar, two different kinds of basses, various acoustic guitars, slide guitars. I mean, so there's everything's got a different thing on it.
Lots of textures.
Lots of textures. That's a very important word for what I'm doing.
Yes, yes. I think this is one of those songs. This Must Be the Place, is that from her album?
No, that's from Daphne Ashbrook's album that I did back in 2010. It's a Talking Heads song.
Oh, okay.
That Sean Colvin covered, and she wanted to do an album of covers, and Sean Colvin was one of her favorites.
Well, let me play this clip, because there's, from what I could hear in there, besides the guitar, there's mandolin. Banjo. Did you play the bass on that?
I played everything on it.
Because the bass line, everything kind of builds. The thing is the arrangement, but you're doing really cool stuff in there. Let me play this clip. This Must Be the Place, and see if you guys can pick out all the instruments, and then we'll tell you. You can tell us exactly what you were playing on this thing.
Pick me up and turn me round. I come home. I'm born with a weak heart. I guess I must be having fun. But the less we say about it, the better. Let's make it up as we go along. Feet on the ground, head in the clouds. I'm okay, I know nothing's wrong.
There's a bunch of stuff in there. I'm whispering. We have the mics muted. I'm like, is that okay? There's mandolin. There's, you know, we're trying to go through all the different instruments. But I think the thing that's really cool about it is how everything builds. And yes, it's an orchestration. The way the bass came in, it didn't sound like traditional. You're doing lines. You're doing. It's part of the counterpoint of the whole thing.
Yeah. Speaking of yes, I mean it's a total Chris Squire bass part.
But it just builds, and you have these, you know, the mandolins there, then the banjo comes in, and there's some other guitars in there that are building besides the two acoustic guitars.
Yeah, there's Den Electro 12 string, which mm-hmm. does all the swinging and the choruses and some of the Steve Howe kind of 12 string lines in there, and then banjo, mandolin. Rhythm banjo, bass.
What was the electric guitar?
Was the Den Electro. I don't
the Den Electro.
There was a junk dunk down gang. That was a Tele.
Tele, and then you were using two acoustic guitars, both steel string or one was one a gut string. I couldn't tell.
No, they were both. One's my Martin 71 Martin D18, and I think the other one is the Salmon and Patrick. I don't think I double tracked the Martin.
Oh wow. Yeah, no, they sound different. The timbre of the two guitars.
I'm probably capoing one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. I want that.
No, that's a great.
What a rendition.
Is that an album? Is that on an album?
Yeah, it's an album called Grace Notes. It's on my label, Dharma Paula Records, and you can find it on iTunes and the usual places. Daphne Ashbrook. She's an actress, actually.
She was one of the companions of Doctor Who.
Ooh, you've now let your hand out there, Jeff.
I'm a big Who fan, so, and I'm not afraid to admit.
You can't see this on radio.
She's really. Oh wow, he has a. Now I got to take a picture of that. Come on, that's just too. He's got this little mini Doctor Who scarf on there. Like, hold on a second, I'm going to take a picture of it. This is great. Another Doctor Who fan. Great. Anyway, yeah, she was in the movie. The
Paul McGann.
Yeah, the Paul McGann one. She did a great job. That's a great song. Really cool song.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you were gigging around town from what I was reading. So after school, what did you do?
I was hitting the clubs playing, you know, six nights a week. I was actually doing that while at college, being a double major, being on the fencing team, being on the Italian club.
Wow.
And I don't know when I slept. I have no clue.
Wow.
I don't know how I did that.
You were just young and had a lot of energy because
and a lot of coffee.
But what were you just playing like top 40 stuff?
Yeah, I was playing top 40,
which is interesting because that's broadening your ear too.
Yeah. I mean, I never really had gotten into R&B as a guitar player until I started playing gigs, and now I consider myself, you know, really into R&B feels. I'll go and play an acoustic gig and I'll start doing some average white band licks, and everybody go, "Wow, that's so creative." I go, "No, it's just average white band."
What did you use back then? What was your main guitar? A Tele?
I started out with a Sunburst Stratocaster with a maple neck kind of, you know, late Clapton before he got straight while he was still playing really good. Mm-hmm. Sad to say, though. I hope Eric's not listening. I played that for a while, and then I got this guitar, which we talked about briefly before. Guitar stands. This is my electric guitar that I've had since about 1983 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Strat, but it's a complete mutt. It's got a JB Player neck, a rosewood mm-hmm. neck, a Kramer body with cream color, which you'll
see. Is that alder?
I have no clue. It's painted. That's all I know.
Okay.
With a really nice tortoiseshell pick guard. I've gone through a few different pickup combinations, but I settled on these Duncans that Norik Rensen, our good friend, put in for me, and a Floyd. I used to have a couple of different other.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that seems to be the most reliable. And what else can we say about it? It's a five-way switch, which to me is like the only way to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always using the middle positions unless I'm doing heavily rock and roll, and I'll use the...
Well, yeah, for the R&B and stuff, you use that kind of out-of-phase sound a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and then, of course, you know, use the bass pickup if you're doing, you know, blues or Hendrix.
The bridge pickup and the neck pickup on there are look like they're dual coil. They're humbuckers,
yeah,
right?
So I can go ahead and have a push button switch to get rid of the...
So you can go. You can go to single coil or double. But I mean, with the on those pickups with the two coils in humbucker mode, do you still get enough top end to really do like a skank type rhythm?
Oh yeah.
Well, actually, here, why you might as well show us since you have the here. Let me turn you up. Turn it. And that's now. What's your setting? Your toggle.
Between the last two.
And you're in humbucker mode?
No, I'm in single coil.
That's single coil.
No, that's humbucker is up, yeah.
It's humbucker. Sorry. That's pretty bright. Those are great pickups. I really like that. That's a nice sound.
Well, I realized years later that the reason that I can do that kind of chicken picking thing isn't from listening to R&B, but I was kind of studying under an acoustic guitar player, singer-songwriter, who used to live around these parts, named Mark Milan.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really influenced by Stephen Stills and Buffalo Springfield, so he would do all these... Here, I'll get off the other guitar and we'll... Picture worth a thousand words. This is the Simon and Patrick.
Yes.
Out of Canada. So Mark taught me how to do the...
Growl.
Yeah.
No, I had Snuffy on, and he had these pre-war Martins, and it gets that sound, yeah. Like, and which this guitar does too, but it's a style. And he's like, yeah, this, you know, like Stephen Stills,
very
Black
Stephen
Queen.
Stills.
He's like, yeah, Black Queen. No, that's true. But you were talking about the yeah, that has a great sound. It's That's a beautiful guitar.
I feel so lucky.
And you got it for a great price.
And I went on to meet these guys, Godin, at Godin owns Simon and Patrick. Simon and Patrick are actually the sons of the guy who started Godin.
Really?
So that's how they got the name Simon and Patrick.
Ah.
And they're now, you know, working at the company. Little Simon and Patrick are now
big.
Oh, that's
right. Simon Godin.
Yeah.
Duh.
Hello. So I've got connected up with him through Bob Bobonas.
Well, is Simon and Patrick now making the acoustic guitars for Godin? Are they?
Well, they are. They are part of Godin. They've always been part
there
of Godin.
Oh, hi, okay. Steve Pfister. You're going to listen to this.
You got to get one of these. But keep an eye out in Germany and where you are.
Wherever
right now.
You are right now.
So, but no, they sound great. But you were talking about the country thing, and I want to play a clip that you gave me, and this is called "Bad Boys," and it's just got some great licks in it, talking about licks. So let me play this, and then we'll talk a little about what you did on it.
What bad boys do? What bad boys do? It's dangerous feeling like your skin is on fire. What bad boys do? He'll tell you I love you, but you know he's a liar. I can give you everything but a broken heart, but you know I will not do what the bad boys do.
That's just some great guitars. What are you using? Is that your Strat?
It's my Tele and my Strat.
Because you're getting like a really chimey type of really nice bright sound, and it's not a standard type of Tele sound. What amp were you using?
Let's see. That would have been probably my original Pod.
Oh, you did that all through a Pod, because there's a tinkly type of sound that the first guitar when you're playing those chords with the fingers that kind of that
it's
riff.
It's really a Mike Landau rhythm guitar influence.
Right.
He has that really high end bright thing that he does, and you know, kind of putting that with kind of a Vince Gill kind of rhythm guitar kind of sound, and putting it all together and trying to pull my influences, which aren't country at all. Dick Wells is a wonderful session singer who is also a wonderful writer. He and I wrote a bunch of songs together. We took them to Nashville and then came home. but, you know, we did these wonderful demos, and I got to, you know, do all these different styles of guitars, which basically is, you know, my influence of growing up listening to, like you said, Longines and Messina, the Eagles, all those.
Down,
but you know, kind of those country influenced rock bands, and you know.
Well, you can hear a little bit of the Buffalo Springfield in there. You're doing one guitar, rhythm guitar, and then you're doing like, it sounded for a minute I thought it was a vibrato.
It's a tremolo sound that was on the
were you using the amp tremolo, or were you doing the volume pedal?
What was that? It was an outboard unit that I used to use that had some really gnarly out sounds, you know, like a heavy tremolo, and I haven't been able to really find a great tremolo, so I'm working on trying to get a deal with Hammond. But
I can't remember the name of them. There was one at NAMM that actually had. There's two different circuits that were used. There's one from the Blackface, which shared a tube from one of the other preamp tubes, but the earlier Cream amps, like a Cream Bandmaster Bassman, those ones had their own separate tube, and it was different circuit. So like, especially the guys that play the surf music and stuff, that's a critical thing, because it's got a different sound. But there's a guy that makes it in Iraq, that's that original circuit. I have a Bandmaster, and it gets that sound. But if you want that sound, I mean, if you want to play for what it's worth and hit that octave, that's the one that gets that sound.
Yeah, it's hard to really find an amp emulating tremolo that really is.
It's that circuit. It's a tube circuit. It's hard to get it in a pedal that's digital. It really does color the sound. It's really a big part of it. But that's cool. What you were doing, though, you're getting that type of effect. That was a great... this is pretty cool. You're doing all these different licks in there. And then the rocker thing, it came out. You did that.
It's trying not to play like a a really adept guitar player. Trying to keep it real basic, real John Lennon, so a lot of crunchy double notes.
Well, the country stuff that you were doing was pretty slick. I mean, it was polished.
Yeah, well, that
it didn't sound
loose. The solo, I wanted to go really kind of like, And you know, when what you're talking about, all the parts fitting together, I mean, you'll see that common with everything that I do. It's all, you know, it's like this weaving together of stuff. It's very classical influence. It's very progressive rock influence. Mm-hmm. It's that same sort of thing of there's basically two things going on there with my music, and if I can look at all the different styles I do, there's the common thread is there's that interconnected orchestration of it, so they're all, you know, and when you're playing the drums and the bass too, it's easy to make it all fit together because mm-hmm. you're thinking about it as you track every
yeah.
part.
Yeah.
The second thing is an influence of Steve Reich, which is a minimalist composer.
Yes.
So you'll hear that kind of sequenced thing going on in almost every style of music that I'm doing. You know, you'll hear it like in The Edge in U2, you know,
yeah.
you know, the Brian Eno influence of, you know, those and repeats through, you change the bass note over that. And that's something that really influenced me heavily even before hearing The Edge, that style of playing.
Well, let me play a clip that you gave me that's kind of it. Now, I'm cutting it where, you know, there's a big vocal introduction. This thing's called Shiva. And yeah. there's a big vocal thing because it's kind of a repetitive, like a chant.
It's from a Kirtan album.
Yeah. So you're and then you then the instruments come in, but it's interesting because it's that kind of a thing where it's the main theme, if I can say that, is it's repeated and repeated. But what you do some interesting stuff, and I noticed there was slide guitar in this, which was kind of interesting.
It is definitely a deliberate effort to go, hello, Joe Walsh.
Yes. Okay.
the
very cool stuff.
The solo before it is, you know, Joe Walsh without a slide. The second part is Joe Walsh with, because, you know, when we're kids, we want to be our heroes.
Yes.
So when you get to do sessions sometimes, you kind of get to pretend like you're them.
But listen how it builds and stuff, because it's basically kind of like the way the piece is, it's like a repetitive, like almost like a, it's not a drone, but like a musical phrase that's repeating,
yeah,
repeating.
There's a
like
lot
a
of
round, that. I guess would be the classical term.
Like yeah, a, I mean, Kirtan is, the way I describe it easily for people to understand is it's campfire songs for yogis.
Oh.
So it's like, you know, 99 bottles of beer on the wall, and you repeat 99 bottles of beer on the wall, and so on and so on.
Okay. All right, here, let me play the clip. Now it's interesting because now you have to check the whole song out, because it starts out with this kind of a chant. It doesn't sound like that mm-hmm. it goes there, and then you have this whole thing, and now it makes sense to me. It's the whole, I get the Joe Walsh influence. But besides the slide guitar, there's another, you're using
a
lap steel, a dobro.
Yeah.
So there's these like cool little things going. You got to really listen, and if you listen to the show on headphones, you'll hear it because they're going. It's panned really well, so you can hear all the different instruments. But he's doing all these really cool little runs, little slides on the dobro, and then you were using one or two acoustic guitars.
Two acoustic guitars there. I think they were both double tracked. The Martin 71.
The Martin. Okay. Yeah. Because it's just, yeah, it's just, but the way it all interplays, again, it's kind of its own, it's an orchestration, and it really fits very well. So
it's yoga for rockers.
And you can hear in this, in the, when the slide comes in, the ooze, like the Fran Henley would mm-hmm. do on the Joe Walsh records with, you know, the Eagles coming in and
yeah.
singing the ooze on the top.
Yeah. No,
so
it's very cool. It's very cool. No, but I caught the one lick with before the slide part where you, that's a very Joe Walshy type of thing, but it was very cool. And you got his sound, and that's the pod? Or was that an
amp? That was the Pod Pro. I just got rid of that and got the Pod HD 500X for Christmas.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty close to a Fender. I think he used a Vibrolux when he did the crank.
I mean, you know, people like to, you know, snuff their noses, turn their noses up at amp emulation, but Line 6 has been doing it for a very long time, and they've got, if you really tweak it well and pay attention to what you're doing, mm-hmm. You can get some pretty cool amp sounds, because I was never one to collect amps because they're really heavy to carry around.
Yeah, no, that's true. They get the sound, but the emulators, I'm now at the point where I have to admit I can be fooled. I was fooled there. That sounded like...
And it's also the context. If I sat with you just, you know, raw and played for you, you'd probably go, well, that's not a Vibrolux.
Yeah.
But you stick it in a track, and you stick it in the right place in the track, and you go, oh, yeah, that's
that
cool.
Works. Yeah, well, that's very cool. Now... the clips that you gave me a bunch of stuff that shows a lot of different things. So I want to play another clip that just shows a whole different side of you. And I'll let you set this one up, but it's called Utopian in L.A.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of like everything in the kitchen sink. This is an album I did with David Joyce, who's a wonderful session singer and keyboard player. He's working with Burt Bacharach right now, has been for a while. He used to play with Natalie Cole.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a Grammy. Look at him.
Really?
But he and I did this.
He sings with Fish to Birds sometimes.
Yeah. He and his talented brothers. So he and I got this little project called the Dharma Buds, because we're both
Dharma Buds
influenced by spiritual stuff. And it took us forever to do it because we're all so busy doing other things. And we started a second album. God knows if we'll ever finish it. Anyway, we all brought in tunes that we had started. And this is one that I had started. It has a sequenced thing on the synthesizer. And it was kind of reminded me of Sting's, you know, I'm an Englishman in New York. So mm-hmm. I called it Utopian in L.A. So it started out that. And then we kind of layered some different ideas and, you know, some Wes Montgomery lead licks.
Well, this is... totally different than anything we played previously right now on this show. But you got to take a listen, because that's the thing that caught me, was the whole octave thing that you were doing. It was very cool. Real quick before I play it, what were you using?
For the lead guitar, I was using a Joe Pass Epiphone mm-hmm. guitar, which I got specifically just to do this album, because I didn't really have a hollow body.
And you were using the Line 6?
And the Line 6.
And the Line 6. Okay, check this out. This sounds really great. Now, one thing that caught me that was very interesting in how you set up the song is usually the sax guy will play a solo, and then the guitar player will play a solo, and the keyboard will play a solo. But in this piece, even though that's your solo part, you are constantly interweaving with the saxophone. And it's kind of an interesting play, because it's not like a answering type of thing.
Well, it's really the theme of the song. So the sax player is playing the riffs, and I'm playing the melody.
Oh, okay.
So that part's easy. What came before that, which we didn't get to hear, was the piano solo over a swing section, and the sax player plays. And And there's the point of this album was for us to bring some world music into the jazz world and put them together. And what happened was the jazz people thought it was too world, and the world people thought it was too jazz. So there you go. But it was a lot of fun to do.
Well, so that rhythm section's to die for. That's a great
Smitty
rhythm
Smed, Oscar Seton, and of course David and myself, and I can't remember the sax player's name to save my life all of a sudden.
It wasn't Eric Marienthal.
No, it was, plays a lot of big band stuff. It'll come to me after the show, I'm sure. And then I can't remember the Duduk players. He's a player in San Francisco. He sent us some parts that we just kind of weaved in, which was really a nice touch.
I love the way it the rhythm thing played with in the jazzy feel. It's a nice sound.
And there's that kind of like same kind of tremolo-ish guitar in the background, electric guitar. I'm using the Strat behind there for mm-hmm. the rhythm part. So you have a little bit of that more modern kind of like a little bit slightly edge kind of guitar in the background. So it contrasts nicely. And then David's playing the melody with me on the piano for mm-hmm. the choruses and then the bridge. And then just when you fade it out, we have slide and, you know, maniacal.
Oh, no, the song's like, it's a pretty lengthy song.
9 minutes or something?
Yeah, it's always, it's tough. It's tough to cut. Because I'm trying to get enough of it to show what you're doing, but there's so much stuff on that song. It really is. I mean, a lot of the stuff that you gave me, there was just a lot I regretted not having. But, I mean, we could have gone 2 hours just playing the clips. I mean, they were that good.
Thank you.
Real quick, we're almost out of time, and I want to get some information on upcoming gigs and stuff that you're doing before we leave. But I want to talk a little more about the healing aspect of the music and the spiritual aspect of it. And then I was thinking of either playing the Paramahansa Yogananda,
very nicely done,
or
I think you should play Pathless Path.
Well, I'm going to play that at the end.
Oh, okay.
That's going to be the close with Kimberly Haynes, a great vocalist. And but what I wanted to know is, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your view. You know, explain that.
Gosh, that's kind of like an hour in itself, just trying to explain it. But in a nutshell, I've always been deeply moved by music in a spiritual sort of way, even though I didn't realize it at a young age that it was a spiritual sense. And when I got into classical music and progressive rock, it was that spiritual element that was calling to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so through those influences, they come out in whatever I do in trying to bring that that connection with people, whether I'm doing a synthesizer album like Yoga Heart Healing, or you know, kind of a world groove thing like Primordial Sonics, or any of these things, there are always an element of that is coming through in what I do. So people are moved by music because it touches their heart, whether it's the lyrics of a song or just the mood of a song will lift them up or, mm-hmm. you know, empathize with them. And it's a friend.
Yeah. Know? No, I believe that it can stimulate. We a bunch of my friends who are musicians, session guys, believe that, too, that you can stimulate areas of the brain musically by sound that enhance that self-healing part of their body, because your brain in certain types of sleep and stuff, it starts healing the body, it starts repairing things, and you can actually stimulate that. And and also I've seen it, I've played music for coma patients and you can see their vitals go up when they're listening to the music. It's totally demonstrable. So but I think that yes, that that aspect of the healing is in that spiritual thing. It's very prevalent in your music. It comes out very strongly.
Awesome.
I don't have time to play another clip because I have a good chunk of the Painless Path. I edited two
Pathless
big
Path.
Pathless Path.
But it's never painless, believe me.
I just got to watch how I write stuff late at night. Pathless Paths. Anyway, so the what I wanted to do real quick is let people know where you're playing and gigs that are happening, what's going
on. A lot of stuff what I'm doing now is with a wonderful singer-songwriter named Kimberly Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be playing opening for Plainsong Sunday night at 8 o'clock at McCabe's. So please, everyone, come down and support us in Plainsong. They're wonderful. Two wonderful singers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to be playing at the Goddess Temple in Irvine on April 22nd for an Earth Day concert with MB Gordy. You know MB, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Great
wonderful
drummer.
Percussionist and drummer.
Drummer.
And then we're going to be going to Arizona. So if anybody out there in Arizona, we're going to be in Mesa, Tucson, and Sedona with Peter Sterling.
Oh, very cool.
Playing with harpist Peter Sterling. And that's going to be a lot of fun, the 27th, 28th, and 29th, and 30th. You can check out Kimberly's website and Facebook page for that information. Her Facebook page is search for Kimberly Haynes or Music Medicine Woman, or go to her website, musicmedicinewoman.com. And my website, while we're at it, is dharmapalarecords.com, D-H-A-R-M-A-P-A-L-A, records. I have to sit and think about that.
You have to post all that, Jeff.
Yeah. No, I'll get the two websites up there. And I'm friends with Kimberly, so I've seen that. That album is...
Awaken Me.
Awaken Me.
Yes.
It's very, very, very good. It's a great album.
You.
I downloaded the whole thing.
It
after
was
I
so
heard
much fun to work on.
And she's a killer singer. So, and then any announcements from...
Well, speaking of music for healing, I have the honor of producing a benefit concert for Jerry Donahue, mm-hmm. which is taking place at Bogey's on the 18th of April, and it's an all-star show. It's amazing. Guitar lineup. Freebo is going to be hosting it.
Cool.
And we've got Albert Lee, who's been on this show, and Peter Asher, and Carl Verheyen.
I was thinking he's been
wrong.
On here, yeah.
John Jorgensen.
He's
and,
great.
And Lawrence Schuber.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's the all-stars of all-stars. And tickets are still available. You can check up onto the Bogey's website. There's a link to get tickets, and it's going to be sold out. There's already 70 tickets sold, so hurry
okay.
up,
okay, yeah, and there, I've been posting it up on the All About Guitar site, too, so all the information's being posted, and I just want to throw out real quick, if you can, the information for Rosemary's birthday.
Rosemary's birthday, she's calling it Butler's Birthday Bash at Soho in Santa Barbara this Thursday, and I'm in her band, so I'm really excited. I'll be singing backgrounds with her and playing percussion.
She's awesome.
She is.
And she's
amazing.
Fun and
she's
funny.
And she's a great bass player.
That's right.
I will never
Rosie,
stop
hear
saying
this?
It. She is a great bass player.
Get your calluses on.
Bookended into playing again.
Yes. So anyway, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We do need to have you come back. I want to do a show just on the whole spiritual healing thing.
I'd love
and
to.
Also, we should do a show and have you and show the interaction with you and Kimberly.
Oh, that would be
I'd
great.
Love to have you guys on there, too. And what I want to do is I want to play this Pathless Path. And I edited two big clips. It's about a two-minute clip. Can you set it up for me?
In what
way? You're doing. What
doing?
Are you doing on there?
So, okay. So there's a charango, which is a South American instrument. It's kind of like a double-stringed ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool little instrument. There's a 12-string acoustic. I'm playing fretless bass on it. And what else is on that? Oh, and classical guitar, of course, which was a late addition. That was Kimberly's request. I thought it was going to be a little over the top, but it's kind of cool.
No,
nicely.
Yeah, no, you'll hear it. It's just a beautiful piece. Thank you so much for coming
thank
on.
You so much
I'm
for
so glad
me.
I finally got you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Lori, it's always a pleasure to have you here. And thank you for, well, actually, you put this together more.
Thank you, Lori.
And thank Alona for introducing. That's how we met, from her, you doing her show.
Small circles here overlapping.
Yes. It's a small world.
Yeah.
www.dharma.com. Dharmapala Records.
Dharmapala
Records. And www.musicmedicinewoman.com and Kimberly's site. And check out that album. It's a great album.
Yeah.
Everybody, have a great night. Here is our clip of Pathless Path. And enjoy, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
On the pathless path.
breathless power.